Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Interesting AF. We've been off the air for, I think, two weeks. Some of us have been sick. Some of us have been doing the New York City Marathon.
Walking. I like to stress.
Still doesn't matter. You did it.
I did it.
You did it. That's what fucking matters. And so in case you don't get it, then Linda was the one that was sick and had zero voice and so couldn't do it. And she did not run a marathon or walk it for that matter. But we are back. And I'm really excited about this episode because I think it's going to be fun. Because I think, you know, we are going to talk today about the great equalizers, the great human equalizers. So which I had to look this up because I didn't know when Elaine suggested this topic, that it's basically everything, like, you know, things that everybody feels or does or has to, you know, it happens to them in their lifetime.
So I think there's an added point of that is like great human equalizers also include things like it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic background is, what class, race, country, like it doesn't matter. There are just some things that we all have to endure. Like, sure, some of like the uber rich in the world who are well above any of us normies down here on planet Earth, but it doesn't matter if you come from lower, middle, upper, like any semblance of that. There are just some great human equalizers that we all have to endure as well. So I also put a couple of those in there too, because it don't matter how much money or how little money you have. Some of these are just, we all look ridiculous or we all have to endure them.
So indeed.
I want to add that point too.
Indeed. And I think it's good to remember that. It's good to remember that there are things that we all feel happen to us, you know, whatever, that, you know, in this time of, and I will say this, in seeming, you know, polarization, I think we have more in common than we have, you know, different. And so I think this is kind of where we want to go and kind of think about, you know, this. So I don't know, do we start with the heavy ones or do we start with the fun ones? Because I kind of want to start.
We could just throw them in as we feel them. So
all right, perfect.
Want to throw your first
all
one,
right, I'll throw the first one. And I think one of the great human equalizers is that everybody looks hot in sunglasses.
Ooh, I like that one.
That's why, ladies, never flirt with somebody that is wearing sunglasses. Wait till that person takes off the sunglasses. And
that's a fantastic life lesson.
Speak from experience.
Everyone looks hot in sunglasses, assuming they have found the sunglasses that work for their face.
But I will tell you, even if they don't work for their face, it creates and I was talking to somebody about it. I was like, you know, it's because it creates facial symmetry. No matter even if they work for your face or not, it like creates, and we're all attracted to symmetry. So I think that's why everybody looks hot in sunglasses.
That's so good. I've never, ever, ever thought of it that way.
And neither did I until I was driving to an event on Friday talking about this. And I was like, wait, maybe this is why. But I have yet to see anybody that is not improved by a pair of sunglasses.
I'm trying to think. It's either someone I know or some actor. I'm pretty sure it's someone I know, so I won't blow up their spot. Because also I can't think of who it is, but I know in my head there is an example and I will find that for you and we will discuss this
offline.
And it's going to drive me. I'm going to think of it like 3 days from now, like 4 a.m. and text you and be like, I have an example for you, but I know I have an example because I know that my husband and I have talked about being like, if he just picked a different, like this person is so committed to this one style of sunglasses. And I'm like, it ain't working. Like,
look.
Okay. But I would still be curious to, once I remember who the hell this person is, I will find a picture of them in the sunglasses.
And then out of the sunglasses.
I have a question.
Yes.
Here's I'm gonna throw this at you. What about like transitions sunglasses? Like the real serial killer looking.
Which ironically, both of my husband and dad have. I don't count those.
Okay.
It has to be real sunglasses. Because yeah. Like because if you see them without the like with the not dark sun, it's not gonna because you've seen them in both.
That's fair.
And so I don't know. But I have no, to
that
test.
That question just popped into my head and I was
that's
like,
a good question. Wow. What about okay, you, that's nuance. I like it. We're talking about nuance.
Yes. Okay, so one of the ones that I have believed for decades, a great human equalizer that is like similar, but like opposite to yours yeah. is that no one, even the most stylish of people and even the most attractive of people, no one looks good in bowling shoes.
100%. No way. You just look like an idiot clown that forgot the rest of your clown outfit.
Like, you want to go bowling, you will have to enter a great human equalizer because bowling shoes are hideous. They are thin and flat-footed, but, like, you got to wear them.
Yeah.
And bowling is way more fun, especially when you're with your friends having a couple beers, than worrying about bowling shoes. But no one looks good in bowling shoes.
I have never seen one person look good in bowling shoes.
Like, even the kind that you might be able to style and pick out for yourself, like.
No. Yeah, but it's because the way they're, like, look, like, the way they make you walk, too. Like, you kind of, like, you're kind of slipping, and it's kind of a waddle, I think. Like, if I remember, I haven't gone bowling in a while, but, yeah. Not even kids. Like, I think kids were, like, wearing bowling shoes. And I was like, what is happening?
Nothing's cute about it.
Nothing is cute about it. It's just, it's like a means to an end. Whether you're going to bowl well or not. But yeah, definitely not. It was not thought about.
There's no style of pant or shorts or skirt that will make them look good. I should gotta bring like your own socks. Like it's not cute.
I should hope you're not going bowling in a skirt.
Yeah, no, me neither. But like, I don't know, long skirt. I don't know.
Fine. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I feel like you'd slip and like accidentally moon somebody.
True. Yeah, like I would love for someone to prove me wrong. Like,
yeah. Hey, everybody,
some bowling shoes where someone looks cute, but
exactly. Our email is open. Email us to say, hey, this person does not look hot in sunglasses, and or this person looks hot in bowling shoes. I like how we've gone directly to the attractiveness ones all at once.
Yeah, we're starting off light.
Yeah, it's gonna get real dark.
Yeah.
For the ones that I have, it's going to get real dark.
All right, let's go to one of those.
Okay. Sorry to bring everybody down. Death. Death is a great human equalizer.
There are only two truths in this world, right? What are they?
Death and taxes.
That's right. That's right.
And that you look ugly in bowling shoes.
When I die, please make sure I'm not in bowling shoes.
I will. Done. I just, you know, we think, you know, it's like that quote from The Good Place. Like, you know, when Michael thinks about him being over and dying somehow. And like Eleanor's like, yeah, humans are a little bit sad sometimes. We know about death and we're a little bit sad sometimes. But I think it's, you know, in the end, that show does really talk about the fact that death gives life meaning, right? The fact that it ends gives life meaning. And one would hope that that great equalizer makes you want to improve where you are and do, you know, and that's another discussion. But I think that's, you know, one of the things that it happens to you. It happens to people around you. You're affected by it. Obviously, there are different types of degrees. Like, for example, the first real like death that I experienced, it was like when I was 3, and I remember that was one of my first memories was of my great grandmother dying. And I remember, and that was a formative experience for me because it was so peaceful. Like she was surrounded by her family. She was, you know, she went, you know, very peacefully. She just like fell asleep and like, you know, and I remember like everybody just being quiet. And I remember driving her to, because in my culture, we bury them very quickly. So we like, we went and buried her. So it was like very like quiet. But then I had like a huge slew of time where death didn't really affect me. There were some people in high school that like passed away because of accidents, but I wasn't super close to them. Then like the big one was like my grandfather in like my early 20s. But it like happens to you in like different ways, or you are affected by the fact that somebody could die. Like and I think also that is extremely scary, more than like sometimes death happening, right? If somebody's really sick and you think they're gonna, you know, pass away, that's I think also very intense for people. So I think that's one of the great, you know, when people think about equalizers, I think they think about death, right? They think about how this happens to everybody and they cannot, you know, do it. And I think that's why, you know, you have like the uber rich trying to fight it, right? You have all these like, oh, we live in blue zones and we want to, and you're like,
Well, and that was the point I was going to bring up to my earlier point. Like, That is the capital T, capital H, capital E, great human equalizer. It's what makes us part of what makes us human. That one truly throws socioeconomic status out the window because, you know, some of the ones on my list, yeah, you're super uber rich. You may not have to go to some of these places on my list, but there is no amount of money that can get you out of this one.
Nope.
There is not.
Nope.
And I don't care what's his name, Brian Johnson, who's trying to reverse his speech. Like you can spend, like for science, great. Love to see it. Like let's learn all we can about it. But at the end of the day, sorry, buddy. Like
you could slip and fall and die.
That is my husband's biggest fear, is slipping out of the shower. And so when God rest his soul, Bob Saget, when that happened from a fall in the shower, he literally put mats everywhere. Cause he was like, this is my, he's like afraid of like fall, like blowing out his knee coming out of the shower. And now he's like, God damn it. Now I got to worry about falling and hitting my head, dying.
Yeah.
All right, babe.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like it doesn't, like you can try to plan as much as you can. You can, you know, eat as well as you can and live long. But like, if your life is shitty, like if you just do things for yourself, like, I mean, that's a philosophical question, obviously. But I think fundamentally we'll always have, death is the thing that we all fear somehow, that we all like plan for or not plan for or deny, but it's always there. And that's the dark one. I think that's as dark as we can get, I think.
Well, I'll keep going. Yours are setting up mine really well. By the way.
All right. Awesome. We planned this, everybody.
We didn't talk about each other. We literally said like, we're not going to share our lists with each other.
Nope.
But I think like this is also kind of the point, is like none of these should be shocking to people, right? Like some of these are funny and you may not, like I never thought of the sunglasses thing, but my next one would be grief, right? Like no amount of money, or I don't care how shitty of a person you are or how, you know, narcissistic or self-centered you are, there's someone in your life you care about. And like you said, it's not just maybe losing that person or the fear of losing that person. Like if that happens to you, like grief, it comes in many forms and we all experience it. It doesn't matter what language you speak, how much money you make, like grief is another great human equalizer. And I think what isn't equal is how people handle grief.
Oh yeah.
And like, I know I've had my own weird ways of being like, ooh, I did not think, like, I'll bring up this example. So my dad is a 4-time cancer survivor. The first time.
Yay.
Yay. the first time we found out about it, it was stage four. It was, I mean, truly like out of nowhere. Like my dad was in his 50s, young, healthy. Like he went in for a sore throat. And the next thing we know, we're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And I'm a very social, extroverted person. And I got pissed when people would call me to like offer support and, you know, condolences and all this. And I was like I got mad at my family for telling everybody, which is such an opposite reaction to how I would think I would react to that type of news. So like grief is a great human equalizer, but what isn't equal about it is how each person handles it. And it's not just how each person handles it. It's how you handle it in each situation. Like grief comes in many waves and forms and sometimes it doesn't come immediately. And sometimes you think it didn't come at all, but like you may reflect back and be like, oh, okay, maybe I had acted out and maybe that was like, you know, a form of grief. So that's my dark one that kind of goes along with yours.
Yeah. And I think, you know, calling them dark, I think is
heavy.
It's heavy. Yeah. It's heavy because it's not dark if it's dark. Part of what happens. Yeah. And I think even the most narcissistic feel grief for themselves. Like even if they don't feel grief for other people, they'll feel the sense of loss of not being able to get what they want or not being, you know,
great point.
And they will, you know, they will feel it, I think, more acutely when it has to do with them as opposed to when it has to do with somebody else. But I think the feeling is the same, right? Grief. And also the fact that grief stays with you. It doesn't go away. Like it just hangs out in it's a bit like grief, like to a certain degree, death, like at least is final, but like grief is just the bitch that keeps on giving, right? Like, you know, it's very odd when you are grieving something because it comes out of fucking nowhere. Like you can just be like, I'm blah, 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 living my life. And then all of a sudden you see something, you smell something, you hear something, and you're like put back immediately to that. And, you know, I think I wonder if it's like the brain's way of thinking and keeping the person safe, right? It goes, this is the worst thing that can happen to you and you survived it. And so it reminds you that you can do it. I don't know. Maybe it's me trying to make sense of something that is completely senseless, but you know.
No, I mean, I think our basic animalistic instincts are fight or flight, right? Yeah. And I feel like grief sits somewhere in that because there's like fear as a part of it. There's like, kind of like we said, how you react to it. So I can't imagine that it's senseless. I think it goes to some, and I like your point. That's like, sometimes the brain goes into that protective mode where it's like, hey, the worst thing that has happened to you thus far has happened to you. So you getting this shot is not going to be the worst thing that happens. You know what I mean? Like
it is exactly weird. Right. Yeah.
Remind you and put you back in that place. Like, I honestly think some of the hardest grieving I ever did was when we had to put our dog down in 2020. Like,
I bet.
Because he was not that old. He was not that sick, but he was in a lot of pain. He had lots of behavioral issues. It was the fucking worst. And it took me years to be able to even talk about him without like
bursting into tears
or at least completely welling up and having a tear like come down my face. Like it's so weird and random. And then sometimes you grieve harder for things than others. And like some of that could be like compounded grief from other things, but like, it's just, it's weird.
Yeah. The thing that the grief, that like was the weirdest for me was the grief of after I had a kid. Of like losing my old self.
Oh, that's a big one.
That was like the weirdest one in the sense that like I didn't expect it. I was like, oh, you know, kids change you and but I didn't expect it to be that fundamental about how I felt about myself. And that one was a cluster.
That's a big one. That's a good one.
That one was a cluster. And that one was tough in the sense that I didn't realize that it was going to be that big of a deal for me.
Yeah.
Like I thought, yeah, things would change, but like, I'm never going to be the person that I was before I had kids, ever.
Yeah.
Like that person's dead. That person's gone.
And you're allowed to grieve that.
Yeah.
Because grieving it doesn't mean that you're upset or mad about it.
Yeah.
It's just, and you can be upset and mad about it. Like you can, there's space for both of those things. You can love the person you were back then and love the person you are now and miss the person you were.
Yeah.
And sometimes wish you were still able to do some of the things you could before you had kids. That does not mean you love your kids any less or love who you are any less. You're allowed to grieve that.
Oh,
that's
for sure.
I know you know that, but that's like louder for those in the back.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think it was the shock of it. It was the shock that I was going to, like, nobody told me that was going to be a thing.
Because no one tells us anything. Like, we think that we know going in, like, we think we've heard all the things about.
But we've heard none of the things.
No one tells us anything.
No one tells us anything.
I knew nothing, Jon Snow. I knew fucking nothing.
And the thing is, like, you do all these classes and, like, people, like, you think you're going to be, like, okay. And, you know, it's going to be fine. And then it's not.
We should just assume that women are not okay.
Women are definitely not okay.
At all. Well, because it's also just like scientifically our bodies went through so much trauma and everyone's like, all right, see you next week. And you're like, get fucked. I just got sliced in half or like pushed a watermelon through my vagina.
Indeed.
Fuck off.
It's like, my God.
Anyway.
Yeah. So my next one is feeling excluded.
Ooh, okay.
We all feel excluded at one point or another by people we don't care about, by people we care about, that people that don't matter at all, by people at work, by people in your family, by people. It happens every time. And it's how people like create their mechanisms around how they adapt to social situations. And I think it happens when you're a child and that's how like your formative years. And that's how we all feel that when we're young. And that's how we kind of then develop into either not giving a shit about what people think or giving a shit too much for a shit of what people think, trying to adapt as much as possible. That is, I think, a great human equalizer. No matter your status, because even rich people exclude others. Like they do that all the time for a numerous amount of reasons. And I think that is one that I would add. And I think we feel that younger, but then like it's in different ways when we're older, but it still feels, we still all feel it.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Mel Robbins talks about this both in her Let Them Theory book and as part of her, you know, Let Them Theory tour on the on Rich Ross's podcast, which I sent you. It was such a good episode.
It was really good.
She talked about like a bunch of her girlfriends from way back when went on a trip and she wasn't even invited. And so her first initial reaction was like, what the fuck? You know? And then she took the time to be like, wait, I mean, I haven't like friendship and relationships. Like we've talked about this are a two-way street and I have not kept in touch with them. And instead, like with this Let Them Theory, right? She then comes up with a way to be like, let them go on that trip. Like it's, I'm not explaining it well. Like, it's not like let them, like she's giving them permission or anything. I highly recommend this episode and reading her book. It's truly fantastic. It's very freeing. But I think that's such a good example and like a good place where you can apply it in feeling excluded. It's like, let's examine the whole situation And like, let yourself feel excluded, but don't let it impact the relationships later on, because there might be a reason for that. And it might be because, like, yes, y'all are good friends and have been for a long time, but like, how involved in that relationship have you really been over the last whatever years? And that's kind of like the example that she uses in this instance.
Yeah. And I think it's actually unfair how people are like online kind of taking her message and kind of distorting it a little bit, because they're saying it's the only thing is let them, and it's not.
Nope.
Like, let them is like the catchy sentence that she's giving. But like, there is like work, like there is self-awareness work that goes on behind the let them, right? Like, so I think people are being kind of unfair, even though, you know, I don't obviously don't agree with 100% of everything anybody says ever.
Of course.
But I think people are being, you know, really unfair about that, because it does have nuance to it.
Of course. And the let them is only 50%. The other half is let me. Yeah. Like you really do, I really encourage everybody to read that book. And, or if you don't want to read the whole book, this one episode that she did on the Rich Ross podcast was truly spectacular. Like, I listened to it on one of my training walks. I was texting Linda the whole way. Yeah. I'm just like screaming along with some of it. Cause there's some of this, right? It talks about feeling excluded. And then there's a whole bunch about family. And, you know, so, I mean, some of the shit she said was like, I mean, I'm literally screaming like, fuck yes. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, just to no one on this trail.
In the middle of the trail. I can even see it. Like, I can even like picture that.
There's like people passing me on bikes being like, the fuck is wrong with this chick?
Let them.
Yeah, I didn't give a fuck.
Let me have my moment. Yeah, because I've seen a couple of like influencers or whatever going, well, you know, Mel Robbins, she's saying like, let people do. No, you're like, no, she's not telling people to abuse you. No, that's not. Like,
no.
And I'm glad that that hasn't gotten traction, but I've seen a couple people try, because people are assuming that people won't read it. Or people won't like look at it. So, but
yeah, you know. Except that it's like been a top of the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
For how long? And especially self-help. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah. So I feel like, you know, feeling excluded is something we all feel. And we all like then adapt on how we deal with the social cues that we have then later.
Yeah. Even like, I think that, you know, the phrase we all use now is FOMO, right? Yeah. Like, cause sometimes it's not even like, you were excluded because you weren't invited.
Yeah.
Like, you can have FOMO from something you've taken part in before that you're not taking part in the moment for whatever reason, and you feel excluded. So like, I think that to me, that's included as well, because that is like truly, like you're saying, everyone feels that at some point.
Yeah.
You're even talking about like the FOMO you have for your former self. Like, what are all, you know, all the events there, like parties or things that we used to throw or go to, like,
or like just leave the house without having 50 million snacks. Why the snacks? Why the
and
snacks?
The extra like 10 to 15 minutes to get in the car?
15? That's adorable.
Just like,
that's adorable.
That's a good one.
It's like a process of like getting out of the house. But yeah, yes. I think so. I think that. And I think that one's more formative than we give it credit for.
For sure.
And it you know, does have a lot of impact on how we deal then with adults or kids or whatever. So that I think is a great human equalizer. All of us feel excluded at some point or another.
I completely agree. I'm going to go a little lighter with mine, because this one I also have thought about. So I think the first time I ever thought about it as a great human equalizer, I can like pinpoint the exact moment. It was 2008. I was traveling to go to I got to go to both national conventions in 2008 with the job I had at the time. And they were like super tight in timing. So I was flying from one city to the next, and I'm at baggage claim, and I see several like very famous newscasters from CNN, Fox News, like all the main ones. And like, regardless of whether you watched that station or not, you knew who they were. We're talking about John King and Greta Van Susteren, Dana Bash, like all the big names at the time. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, Yeah, I mean, y'all got a bunch of money. Y'all are way richer than I am. I don't know why I keep coming back to the money piece of it, because money can buy a lot of convenience, right? Is probably why I keep going to that. And so unless you're like actually flying private or like send a courier to get your shit for you, like you got to wait for your goddamn bag just like everybody.
You got to wait for your goddamn bag.
And like there's no line for you to cut. There's no express lane. There's, you know, none of that.
Like
shit.
No hidden so, thing. Yeah. Yeah. That nope, is a great human just, equal.
You're just going to have to fucking wait for your goddamn bag. And if you had a connecting flight or your bag didn't make it, you got to go figure it out like the rest of us.
Also, I don't know if this is a great human equalizer, but it's like connected to that, that you have a moment of panic on whether your shit, your suitcase.
Always. Broke. Yes.
The suitcase broke and that baggage claim is going to see all of your dirty like stuff that's in there.
Mine's that's more like did someone take my bag?
Yes.
Like did someone, so I always try to put like bag tags on there that are loud and obnoxious. Like I won't go as far as getting the loud, obnoxious suitcase.
Yeah.
I have that looks like fucking everybody else's, but I will throw a lot of like, you know, characterizing bag tags on it. But my panic is more like, is someone gonna take my bag?
Yeah.
Think not maliciously, just like thinking it's theirs.
Yeah. I have a loud, obnoxious bag. It's like bright blue. I'm like, fuck it.
Kind of want to get my face on a suitcase, and then you know, there's. Like in Sing 2, like the big fat pig.
Yeah.
The giant pig has his face on his luggage. Like I kind of want to do that so that there's absolutely no way someone could confuse my bag
there. That is a good one.
Yeah, but that one I've kind of always had on there because I'm like, yeah, Greta, like, sup?
Get your suitcase.
I bet your hotel room's a hell of a lot nicer and more convenient than mine, but. Guess but what? Until you get your bag.
Still got to get your bag. It's a great one.
Yeah. So that's one of my silly ones.
So another great human equalizer for me is you will always have the panic of losing your keys. Like you will experience that. Of like the panic of having misplaced your keys, even though you could be the most highly organized person ever and you have a place, but there's going to be one time or two or whatever where you have the panic of like going, oh my God, I lost all the keys and anybody can walk into my house and what's going to happen? And like, I'm going to, and you might find them late, like right. But that panic that sits in, everybody's felt that.
Yes. I agree. I think the panic now with everyone is more the phone.
Yes. Now, I mean, but you know, like the key, now the phone's going to be know, that, like, but.
Completely. But yeah, that's a good one. You're like, I know I put the, oh man.
I had this happen to me just last week. I was taking my kids to the dentist and like, you know, I have a car that like you close and you can lock as long as the keys are near you. Mm-hmm. And I did it. I locked it. But then I was like, where the fuck are the keys? And I like look in my purse. I can't find them. I'm like, are they inside? I can open the door. So that means the keys are somewhere in my purse. And I'm like, what's going on? And then like, I was like, you know what? I can open it. I can close it. I can lock it. That means the keys are somewhere. I'll find them. Let's go to the dentist. And then I touch my butt and my keys are in my butt pocket. And it was like literally me and my kids for like 6 minutes going, where the fuck did they fall on the floor? Did they like, I don't know. And I'm like, am I sitting like, so it is constant. Like everybody has that at least once. But yeah, I can see that. Or maybe we can change it to great human lasers. You lose one thing that like sets you in a panic and you're like, you've lost everything and you don't know how you're going to get it back. It used to be the wallet, right? But now like our phones can be our wallets. So. Yeah,
I used to crack up from the Austin Powers movies when he would go spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch. And like, you know, I've done like, you know, especially when we go into the office, I do my own thing where it's like, you know, computer, watch, wallet, that, you know, you do your like list of whatever.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely that panic. And I have to say, like, nothing infuriated and still infuriates me, but thankfully it doesn't happen quite as often as it did, you know, right in the, I would say, year and a half, 2 years after childbirth. But the, like, straight up amnesia I would get, like, you walk into a room and like, instantly forget why you were in there. Like, it sounds cliche, but I would get so frustrated because I know I can visualize myself, let's like, with keys, with my phone, with something I was going to need later that day. I visualize myself putting it down where it goes. And then when I actually need it, it's not there. And I cannot figure out where the fuck it is. I literally got to the point where I started accusing people in my household that they were fucking with me. Because I'm like, I know I put it here. And if I didn't put it here, where the fuck else would I put it? And things would just go missing. Like, for a solid year.
Mommy brain is a thing.
Oh, it is a thing forever. But, like, it is truly a thing, like, especially right after. And, like, I still, some of the stuff, I still to this day, like, I'm sure I found most of it, but I still couldn't tell you where the hell I had put it when I thought I'd put it somewhere else. It's so frustrating. So frustrating. So yeah, I feel that panic regularly, but nothing like that.
Oh, anymore. That yeah.
All right, I'll throw out my last, like, heavy one.
Okay.
Which I think touches even a little bit of, like, the one that we just talked about, but embarrassment. Like, I don't care how full of yourself you think you are, at some point, whether you hide it well or not, everybody has moments of embarrassment. And I'm not saying everybody wants to, but, like, shit happens. Like, you trip and fall in front of other people, you're going to feel a sense of embarrassment. I think it's totally normal. It's totally human. But I do think that is another great human equalizer because, or like you accidentally say a word wrong and it just, there's that like moment of panic. But I think every single person on the planet has felt embarrassed.
100%. And I tend not to feel embarrassed about like myself.
Yeah. Makes any sense.
I have no shame. Like I don't feel like embarrassed like at all, like when it happens, like when anything happens, right? However, when I'm watching a show or a movie, I will feel so embarrassed for a fake character that I don't know. And I'll be like, can we just fast forward this part? Because it's so embarrassing and I can't handle it. And you can put me in like the shitty, like my kid will say the most out of pocket thing to a person or something. And I'll be like, all right, cool. Like I will be zero embarrassed. And then I will not be able to handle the embarrassment of somebody, a character in a movie. Like it's insane. Like I don't understand it. Like I literally like crawl into myself when it's like something really embarrassing in a movie. I'm like, what is wrong with me? But it's, yeah. So yes, but everybody feels like
it gives them the ick or like it's cringy, right?
It's
like,
cringy. It's yeah. Exactly.
So, like, I get that because like the movie Meet the Parents makes me so uncomfortable because it's just like,
oh yeah,
killer. Like I also get that way about like if it happens in a show or a movie where something could just easily be explained away and then it isn't, and it like the whole episode or the whole show becomes about this like misunderstanding, like that, I hate that shit. But yeah. Yes, I get it. Like you get embarrassed on behalf of someone else and then you just like can't seem to get over it.
And you get and like you're like, I don't even know these people. Like
I know.
What is wrong with me?
Like it's, and maybe like, that's why, like sometimes you get embarrassed for other people, and not that you're gonna say anything, but it's because you don't know them that kicks in.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But yeah, I agree. That is a great human equalizer. We all feel
But yeah, and I don't have shame. Like, I won't feel embarrassed for myself. But like, if I call somebody by the wrong name, I'm unbelievably embarrassed because yes. I should know better.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're in a situation where like maybe you didn't or you misheard it, but like that feeling of like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Like, because it felt like you disrespected them somehow, and yeah. you were,
and you didn't mean to, but like, you know, and so like, if someone mispronounces your name, like please correct them, because yes. like, I know, speaking for myself, like I would never want to continually call somebody by the wrong name.
Nope.
So. Don't ever feel bad about correcting me, at least.
Same. Like, same. And I will say, I don't care about how my name's pronounced. My real name, obviously. However, spell it right. Okay? Just, it's in, yes. the, fucking, it's in the fucking email. It's in the fucking email.
What? Come on. Yeah, I have. Yeah. Yeah. Big problem with that, especially people who've known me for a really long time. I'm like, in what fucking world? You had to put the letters to find the email you were responding to.
I do. I have noticed, though, that Microsoft like Outlook is now correcting names appropriately.
The problem is mine can be spelled several ways.
That's true.
Which is real fucking annoying.
Yeah, well, mine too. So like it'll yeah. be spelled in multiple ways, but yeah. But yeah, that is a good human equalizer. It's interesting how like most of these are like feelings, right? Like
yeah.
most of the, cause we all like feelings are pretty universal, right? You all will feel something, you know, we're not talking about things like empathy and things like that. There's a little bit more nuanced and, you know, I think, but we're talking about the big ones, you know, the ones that you teach your kids, you know, the yeah. anger. The embarrassment, and you know,
how many like complex feelings that we have that literally separate us from animals, right? Like free will is the one truth, like the real thing that separates humans and animals. But like, and animals, they feel grief, they feel fear. There's death, of course. They might even experience embarrassment. Like,
right?
Who really knows?
Who knows?
But. In terms of like the nuance and the depth in which we feel it, it's what separates us from being animals.
Yep.
So it doesn't surprise me that we kind of like defaulted to some of that. And I think like even like my, you know, bowling shoes and like baggage claim is like, there's a little bit of an embarrassment in each of those. There's a little bit of anger that comes with sitting and waiting for your stupid bat. You know what I mean? Like there are those like human emotions that come along with a lot of the equalizers that I put on my list. So
yeah. And I think that's, you know, we try to have this human experience, you know, obviously it's, we don't all have the same lives. And, you know, like I always say, like trauma is trauma. It doesn't matter how deeply mm-hmm. you feel trauma, how you feel trauma, right? It doesn't mean yours is better than somebody else's or whatever, but the feelings, you know, you elicit are the same. And I think that's what we, you know, especially in times like these where we need to remember that we're all human. We're all on this floating ball of rock hurtling through the universe trying to make sense of it all. I think we should just be kinder to each other and just,
yeah.
It's not that hard.
It's really not. It's so much less energy.
So
like
much
you actually
less
feel
energy.
Better. Like you just feel better to just like, I'm not saying you have to assume the best in everybody, but like, no. Just fucking calm down.
Yeah, calm down.
Don't be so quick to anger and malice. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel attacked by that, but that's fine. The anger part, not the malice. Yeah,
I was like, you wouldn't be malicious.
Yep.
But I paid you to be.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't.
Oh, good.
I would never put you in that situation, Linda.
I believe you. I believe you.
But on the topic of malice and death.
Yeah.
We have our next doc is in.
Yes, I am super excited about it. I think we are all super excited.
Yeah, the popping. It's just the popping. Yeah. So we will be talking about the Netflix version, even though there's another one, of the Titanic submarine. Like, is it called, like, it's Titan. It's the Titan.
Titan submersible from the company Ocean Gate.
Yes, exactly. And we will just be talking about, it's Netflix, is around an hour and a half or so.
I think so.
And it is magnificent. You will be horrified.
Yes.
And yeah, it's quite the journey. And that's the one we're going to be talking about.
It's called Titan, the Ocean Gate Disaster. And that's the one on Netflix. There is one on Discovery.
Yeah.
Which in the US is part of HBO Max, I believe.
Yep.
HBO Max, whatever. That one is called Implosion, the Titanic Sub Disaster. We will probably reference some of that, but
yep.
In terms of, like, quote unquote required watching, the Netflix one will be the main catalyst of
exactly
discussion.
Yep.
Of a harrowing story that Linda and I followed from the beginning.
From the beginning.
Like, we were ready to make our own graphics of, like, how much metaphorical oxygen they had left.
Exactly. Oof. God.
It's gonna be lots of human emotions in that one.
Yeah. We're going to be excited. We're excited about that one. So watch that one and come back for this discussion. And also, our emails are open to you talking about the great equalizers that you think are around that we've missed. Obviously, this wasn't a super long conversation. There's obviously more. But we'd love to hear about yours. And if you have some great ones, we'll talk about them next time.
Love it.
But yeah, join us next time. And Elaine, take us out.
Stay interesting.